Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Welcome to another episode of Boots, Balls, and Bras, our podcast with Farrah Williams, Earth Upon. And this week we have a very special guest slash friend, old friend of mine, semi-friend, semi-enemy of both Farrah and I's as well throughout our careers. But now Eartha, Farrah, and I would call her a friend, the wonderful, amazing Bibiana Steinhaus, first female referee ever to ref in a top men's division on the whole planet. In the men's Bundesliga. Give it a round of applause.
Oh, thank you so much. That is lovely. Referees never get applause. I really appreciate that. So that's a really good start to a wonderful podcast session. Thank you so much for having me, guys.
Yeah, that's your first and last applause you're going to get from us, probably. No, to be fair, yeah, we're going to ask you all about what you're doing. We're going to have our halftime team talk all around referees and the match officials, not only in England, but what's going on globally, as we've seen some females come into the World Cup. But first, let's kick off with the Women's Super League, the league here in England results, because we had some really interesting ones. And Bibi, feel free to, you know, pitch in when you want to. But as you mentioned, it's not really your area of expertise in terms of judging players and teams, so we will allow you to sit this one out if you want to. But let's kick off with the WSL. Farrah, what was your most interesting game that you saw on the weekend?
I mean, it has to be the one I was at. It was Reading against Tottenham. Especially, it was a game. I know if Reading had a full fit squad, they would have seen it as a game that they would have wanted to take points from. Likewise, Tottenham. But they had six players out with flu, Reading. So they had a second string team out. But they absolutely dominated the game against a Tottenham team that, you know, with the strength they have within their squad, the game shouldn't have been the way that it was. So it was probably the best performance I've seen from Reading all season. Very impressive in terms of, you know, dominating the ball, chances created. I'm sure Tottenham will be saying they had an off day, but I actually thought that Reading were by far the better team. And actually, rather than say that Tottenham had an off day, I thought Reading were very good. So that result, I mean, for Reading, it moves them 7 points off the bottom. You know, a little bit of security in terms of that relegation, which, you know, they know that they're down there fighting to stay up.
Yeah, number 10 now in the league, and your former club as well. Eartha, what were you going to say?
Yeah, I was just going to say, obviously, Farrah's talks about the quality of coaching and stuff in terms of the Reading backroom staff. I think, do you reckon it's just something that sort of just clicks now at this sort of midpoint in the season? And as you said, like with so many players out, it shows actually the depth in squad and actually the message that's going throughout the squad, even the players that are not playing. When the opportunity does come, they're ready to step in and obviously to translate that into a performance.
I think what's interesting about the performance, Earth, like Reading, from when I went there, they always played a 4-4-2 diamond, which was different to anybody else in the league. And I think as the players over the, you know, as they got weaker, as they started to lose big players, you know, financially, they probably had the smallest budget in the WSL. I think as that started to happen, you obviously, in terms of the caliber of player, is less, which means obviously the games are harder. And I think they went with a more defensive mindset, you know, back five and a four and a one. But it goes completely against what the coaches believe in. And the coaches believe in that style of a 4-4-2 diamond. Mm. They played that against, you know, we spoke last week about the Connie Cup and how important that is. They played that last week against Southampton and had a, you know, really positive result and performance. And
was that the first time that they had they played that formation in the Conti Cup? Yeah, yeah, so it was what you said, that they're testing out formations, testing out players in that Conti Cup, which is another.
They went back to that the weekend against Tottenham, and it gave them more, you know, it doesn't matter about the caliber of players. If you buy into a game plan, which, you know, the players did, I think if you can execute it, you give yourself half a chance. The options they had on the ball were a lot more in terms of that attacking, you know, their crosses in wide areas, the success of that, you know, in terms of, you know, Tottenham's success in wide areas in terms of deliveries was poor. So they had more bodies in the box, so they had better opportunities to score goals. So I think going back to what they believe in is obviously giving them half an opportunity. They've got Chelsea at the weekend. They don't expect to win that game. But, you know, in terms of that performance and actually believing in that formation, if it's something that they stick with, regardless who they come up against, I think it'll give themselves a good chance going forward.
And I think it's so important. Obviously, you give respect to the opposition in terms of what they're going to do, but you have to have your own game planning. You have to be able to execute that and then obviously do the rest. Like, if we relate it to the men's game, I know there was a lot of talk around marking Messi and trying not to let him score in the World Cup, and he still was able to do it.
Yeah, but right.
It's about you have to do your bits right as well and obviously look at what's going to come up against you. So, yeah, I think it breeds confidence, like you said, in terms of being able to deliver what it is you've been learning over the past number of sort of seasons, and then to be able to actually execute that in the Conte Cup, it's got, as you said, it's building confidence and then bringing that into the league. And who knows, they might sit back and nick some points off Chelsea.
Only lost 1-0 to Arsenal, so they again, you know, they put on a good performance there. BB's ready to jump in here. What you got to say?
Yeah, get in there.
I was going to compliment the referee, but I'm not doing it. I'll wait for you to say what you got to say and then I'll let you know.
I just think it's so interesting that you mentioned the different formation that they have played, because I was delighted to see that the team of officials are aware of this different setup and are preparing the teams and the setup of both teams and kind of get into the mindset of what to expect, what are we looking at, what are our key players here, what are the targets. So this is, I was delighted to see that from my perspective, Farah, and I play the ball to you in a second, that the team around Carl Brook did really well.
Yeah, no, I would agree. I think that's the best. I mean, I'm going to put it out there, the best officiating I've seen all season, and actually said that in commentary. Yeah, he was very good. I think, and as you say, I think when you're playing, especially when you play that diamond formation, you normally get a blindside press, which can look sometimes, you know, like it's going to be a foul because the player that's receiving it can't see the press, and sometimes it's often not a free kick, and referees normally give it. I thought he was really good in his decision making, and certainly the penalty shout for Trossard. You know, especially from the stands, it looked like there was contact the way she went down. And on the replay, it was clear, no contact and a dive. But his positioning for that was really good. So, yeah, you're right. I think if they understand the game, referees, and they understand formations, they put themselves in a good position to read the game two or three steps ahead like players do.
Mm. Absolutely, because this is what we're trying to do. Look, I understand that we always have these discussions, and come on, Farah Beggs, I refereed a few times, so let's be honest here. You always accuse us referees of like, well, you might understand the laws of the game, but you don't understand the game, right? So here we are working really, really hard to get exactly that understanding that you mentioned, Farah, to understand the match plan, to know what to look for, to build our movement and our decision-making into the process of what the team formations look like.
I think it's important. As you say, the positioning of the referee is important to get the decisions right. And I know you obviously get it wrong. I think just sometimes with refereeing, it's more a case of when they make a decision and, you know, players can be frustrated with that they don't communicate. You know, it's the go away, I don't want to talk to you. I mean, BB, you were good at that. I mean, I spoke to you pretty much all the time. You could have given me many of yellow cards because I was always in your ear. But yeah, it's referees that can communicate. I think the referees that I think players, you know, respond better to.
So just a question on that, BB. Is it a recommendation or is it good practice in terms of like, would you encourage referees or aspiring referees to do like a coaching qualification to learn about different formations? Or is it actually you see it in terms of a transition of players into referees, and are they able to sort of read the game that little bit better? What do you see from the top?
Awesome question. I thought like two really good points here. Like I really believe in is that if you want to be the best you can be, you need to understand the game. You need to change the perspective. You need to get in people's head to understand what they are looking for. And as a home team, you are preparing your away team. You know exactly everything about the players. You know the strategy. You have an expectation, what the formation may look like, and you prepare your match plan. If you don't do the same as an official, you fail before kickoff. So this is my take on it. Like, we're really working hard on like getting to know the teams, getting to know the formation, and what does it actually means for the referees then? Like, what is the second step then? What does it mean for us? Like, how do we move? What do we look for? And it's not enough for us to follow the ball when it's played. It's to know where the ball is going before it's even kicked. Mm-hmm. You want to be ahead of the game. Mm-hmm. So that's what we are working really, really hard on. And this is why we welcome players into refereeing. Come on, who knows the game best? It's you have been playing. So I can see 1, 2, 3 possible candidates signing up for the next referee course.
You do not, you do not want me in a referee. No, I'll be playing on to so many tackles. You'll be like, this. She is a risk to our, game.
Play on.
I'll be like, play on.
She broke her leg. It's fine. Get up. Brush it off, and I'll be hobbling around on the pitch one-legged. So exactly. Yeah, I reckon you've got maybe one.
The qualities of understanding the game, knowing players.
Definitely.
And as well, like, you know when it hurts, you know what to expect, you know when to show empathy and when to be strict, how to deal with coaches, how to deal with technical areas, like how to approach people, because you know it, because you have a certain type of thing you look for when you have been approached, right? So like getting this knowledge together, I think is an amazing chance for like ex-players that your second best, like if you can't make it to the second, to the national team, your second best choice of listening to a national anthem is being on the field of play as a referee.
BB, sign me up. I am there. Sign me up. I'm sending my CV in now.
Recruitment. Number one. Oh, there you go. Crazy. It's so good. I mean, we're going to get more into
yourself.
We're going to get more into the refereeing. I think maybe Eartha needs to start maybe with a little bit lower divisions potentially before she gets to WSL. But back to the WSL, because there were some other interesting results on the weekend that, and it'd be interesting. It's always good to hear the referee perspective as well as, you know, former players and what we're thinking as well. But Man United beat Aston Villa 5-0, still, you know, clearly at the top. Arsenal scraped by Everton 1-0. Liverpool beat West Ham 2-0. Man City beat Brighton 3-1. And another really interesting game was Chelsea-Leicester City 8-0. Well, 0-8. It was at Leicester City even. That was interesting as well, because in the French league, Lyon beat Dijon 8-0. So you sort of look at the top and you go, what's going on here? But thoughts on that game? Because I thought that was a hugely decisive win as well. We were talking last week about Chelsea, how they're kind of, you know, quote unquote boring, meaning they're in control of the game. They score their goals. They sort of control the game. It's never really that risky from a, you know, from a spectator perspective. But 8-0, big change.
I think a couple of things. I think in terms of the Arsenal game, and that was only 1-0, but the goal was peppered by Everton, right? In terms of, what was it, over 30 shots?
33 attempts at goal and one goal scored. Absolutely crazy. I think it was about 19 on target.
Exactly.
So it's a 4-1 goal. You heard Jonas said after the game, didn't he, in terms of their being efficient in front of goal and composed. He said they lacked that at the weekend. I mean, 33 shots and only winning 1-0. I mean, I'm sure he'll be pleased to go away with a 1-0, mm-hmm. having lost, you know, a similar game last season to Leicester, which actually cost him. Birmingham it was, that actually cost him the league. So,
true.
You know, when they dominated that game, they actually lost. So I think he'll be pleased with the 3 points.
I thought it was interesting in terms of the Chelsea game. Obviously, United had played earlier on. It was 5-1, 5-0. And then Chelsea just rocked up. And by half time, there was already 5-0 up. I was like, they're not taking it as any pressure. They're just doing what they do every week. And as we talked about, Wrighton as a left back, it's always good to see quality. But 4 assists and a goal in the first half just demonstrates that there's goals from it coming from all across the pitch. So, like you said, BB, you can't prepare for any one particular space or player. When you have that widespread in terms of depth of squad, there's goals flooding in from everywhere, and that's what we want to see in terms of the quality across the league.
But Eartha, 8-0 for Leicester, Chelsea. I mean, they lost 8-0 last season away at the same ground, the same scoreline. It's like they haven't learned their lesson.
What are you saying? Don't play Chelsea.
No, but I'm just saying, in terms of, like, we keep talking about the growth of the game, like, it's mad. Like, my opinion of it is that there should be more teams in WSL1, right? Because you think at the bottom, the teams like Leicester and Reading and Villa and all of these teams, Brighton, they can't beat or compete with the top teams. So if you have a couple more teams from the WSL, at least that bottom is more competitive and you get to play games where you're not fighting for your life. It's more competitive. Mm. You know, there's the quality between the top and the bottom is too big. And to only have 12 teams, I think, you know, a couple more that come into the league, certainly it will make that more, you know, the bottom half of the league more exciting. Players are more motivated to play those games because, you know, you can't tell me playing at these teams that are down at the bottom that it's motivating every week to have to go and, you know, fight for your life to just try and get anything so that you don't get a thrashing. It's not a nice feeling as a player.
And you know, that's why you mentioned the Conti Cup is so important in terms of getting those games.
Course.
But do you think the championships or the next league below the WSL, do you think that the next, let's say, four teams could compete with the bottom four of the WSL? Because you're shaking your head no, because that would be my biggest worry, right? Because you still have to have the finances to play in the WSL. You still have to travel all around the country. You still have to be able to recruit and pay players at a WSL standard. Are we there yet?
I think right now we're not there, but that's because they're not professional. So if you look at that WSL 2, there's probably only half of them that have gone professional this year. And so look how long it's taken WSL 1 teams to understand what professional looks like, how to do a day-to-day training, how many amount of days do you have off, how many hours do you need to actually be in on the grass or, you know, in the room doing your analysis and the gym. So clubs down there are only learning that now because they've only just gone professional. So they're probably not ready. The likes of Bristol probably are because they've been, you know, that yo-yo team up and down in terms of WSL. But maybe London City Lionesses, they've been professional now for a few years. But I'm just saying, if you were to put those two teams in and make a 14-team league, then I just think that for those bottom teams, they've got more competition, more motivation to want to play. Mm. You know, Leicester, I mean, those Leicester players must be dreading every game knowing that, you know, they're potentially not going to get a result. And how many can they not concede as opposed to, you know, actually thinking about a result in that game?
Mm. And interestingly, Liverpool beat West Ham on the weekend as well. That was 2-0 at Liverpool. So that means that Liverpool moves up to 9th place. West Ham is still at 6. But like you just said, you look at Chelsea, Man United, they're 24-21-21 with Arsenal, 24-21-21 points down to 18. So they're still, and then it drops way off to 12-9-8 and then all the way down to 7-7 and then 0 with Leicester City. Mm. So between 0 and 24 with 9 matches played in terms of the spread of points, that is a massive gap. And you think about, you know, where we are in the WSL compared to other leagues. And I mentioned the French league beating, you know, Lyon constantly beating these teams 8-0. And but we're having the same thing here. So it is important, isn't it, to make sure that spread doesn't get too wide, that we have the right structures in place behind that, where the finances are being spread. And also, like, for referees, that must be interesting too, because if you're reffing, you know, one of the top games, what a difference between two of the lower teams in the league, between a Manchester United Chelsea match as well. So, you know, choosing referees and selection must be quite interesting as well, BB.
BB, can I ask a question? You know, when it's them games where one team is dominating, do you ever feel to like knock some time off?
No, never.
Brutal.
I can only do 90 minutes. Like, that's it.
I'm like, please just take 5 minutes off.
No, but it's really interesting, Bax, what you've mentioned when it comes to, let's say, look, Arsenal play Tottenham, Arsenal. 47,000 spectators. How amazing is that? What a crowd. And this does, like, that puts extra pressure and extra attention and scrutiny on the players, but also on the officials. Mm-hmm. And you need to be ready for that stage because you are taking massive decisions there. You know that every decision that you take can influence the outcome of the competition, the outcome of the league at the end of the day. Mm. So it is big, it's huge. And like taking this responsibility and getting prepared, mentally prepared as well, for what you are facing is so crucial. So from this season onwards, we have psychology support constantly for our officials to work on a mental base, to get in this mindset, to deal with everything that you can see all over the places. And then you have these like massive games, and then you have some smaller venues as well, where you can clearly see, like by the results you have just mentioned, how much impact a decent crowd, a really good crowd at a home venue can have to push the players, to raise them to the next level. So everybody who's listening in here and supporting a team, make your way to the stadiums, because you can make the difference that brings the motivation to the players.
Yeah. It's interesting, Bibi says that, Bex. Remember, what was it? Maybe when Arsenal played Tottenham at the Emirates, right. We spoke about the Tottenham players more in terms of the exposure to play in front of crowds like that. Mm-hmm. You know, Arsenal players are used to that week in, week out. They do that, whether it be at international or at Bournemouth, they still have 3,000-4,000. Spurs don't. So those players going to the Emirates in front of 45,000 is daunting. And they were, you know, that game, they wasn't good at all. I mean, I was there and they wasn't good. But I guess you're right in terms of refereeing. It's the same, right? That, you know, that expectation on them to deliver in front of big crowds, which we're not used to in the women's game. And certainly women referees within the English game are not used to. So, yeah, I guess that as players, you don't consider, you know, their preparation in terms of going into those big games with big crowds where, you know, the noise is, enhanced. And their decision making, and you know, with the crowd probably, you know, against them if they make the, you know, certainly the home crowd, the wrong decision.
I was gonna say, like, did you ever feel, because you reffed in huge matches, Bibi? What was your biggest game you've ever refereed?
Besides the biggest crowd,
a men's game, I'm not gonna be happy.
No. Besides England, crowd, New Zealand, obviously.
My biggest crowd was at Wembley Stadium, Olympic Games final, when Japan played the USA.
2012.
Sold out. That was pretty impressive, I'm not gonna lie.
Go ahead. I was going to say, because you reffed another top men's, was it the European?
You can say that now. You can say the men's now. it's great that we have female referees that have, you know, gone to the top. I'm saying the top because obviously the men's, in terms of how long they've been professionals and how big the game is, it's great that, you know, females are able, because, I mean, Bibi, you've refereed in the men's game. In terms of the levels and the demands of the men's game, the speed of it, the decision-making, you have to be up there. You have to be good. There's no hiding away from it, because you will just get found out. I think in the women's game, you can get away with it a little bit because the game's a little bit slower. Only now that it's professional, it's starting to speed up. But in terms of the men's, there's no hiding place for officials, and certainly not female officials.
And it's like, well, one of my probably biggest games in the men's competition was my first ever match I refereed in the Bundesliga when Hertha Berlin played Werder Bremen. Like, let's say only around 50,000 in the stadium. But this game was broadcasted live in over 100 countries all over the world. Can you imagine how many people are sitting in front of TV and watching the game because of a female official first ever refereeing in that competition? So the pressure that is on you and on my team on that day has been tremendous, like really huge. And this is where you get to go, you need to go to a mental state that you can deal with that, that you are entering the field of play knowing that you have prepared everything that is within your power to be ready for that game, that you have prepared the teams in the best way possible. You're physically in the best shape ever. Your nutrition has been top. You know the laws of the games inside out, and every possible decision that is thrown onto you, you will have in your stride. And this is the only way you can battle these 90 minutes.
And now let's head into our halftime team talk, because we want to get into Bibiana Steinhaus, first female referee in the men's top division anywhere on the whole planet, what female refereeing is looking like in both the women's game and the men's game, and just what you're doing here in England as well. So, Eartha, I think you wanted to kick off with a question, didn't you?
Yeah, I was just saying, in terms of all that, the preparation that you have in terms of referee, mental state, physical state, where does equipment come into that? Obviously, with our podcast being boots, balls and bras, as a female referee, how does that stand with you in terms of like resources and how you're feeling in terms of confidence and moving around the pitch? Do you have to prepare for that as well as a ref?
Absolutely, because this is what the world sees. Like your communication skills, not just verbally, your body language needs to be spot on. You need to feel comfortable in the equipment you go out. It took us years to get female referee shorts, okay? So it's just, well, we are on a journey. We are on a journey and we're getting more and more professional and equipped in that way as well. So then you keep all the, you're working with all the communication sets that we have now. So everybody is mic'd up, you can speak to each other. You have different support systems that should enhance your performance on the field of play to build everything into. Well, I have to say, no, Bex, really important here. Whenever we get together with our officials on our weekly calls to summarize the weekend, we always start with five laws of the game questions. So here we are.
No.
Your knowledge is going to be tested. You are wearing international kit. You have listened to international, to your national anthems on the field of play. I expect you to be on top of that.
Right, let's go.
Okay. Before we start, I'm going to say it right,
wants
right
to
now.
Bet.
I don't care about the laws of the game yet because I'm just looking at it from a player's point of view. And I think some of the laws in the game are just crazy. But anyway, we'll talk about that. Let's ask the question.
Yes, let's come back to that. That's a really interesting point. Mm-hmm. That was a good excuse, but you're going to fail it. Don't worry.
No worries.
As I always do.
To be fair, most exams I failed, so no problem. This is
Do you know what was so interesting before we get started? Like when I first started working with the referees and with BB, I could not believe the intricacies of the laws of the game that I just was not aware of. And not only from player, then obviously I worked at FIFA, so I organized the Women's World Cup. So I had to know the laws of the games. I had to know the competition regulations. And still there's things that I constantly get caught out on and the laws are changing and it's absolutely mind blowing. Like I think if players knew more and if fans knew more about the laws of the game, we'd have a lot less dissent against referees because most fans don't know anything about
because
football.
They change so regularly. They change so regularly. That
if I do well, BB, I want to be WSL game by January.
Yeah. We have a fitness test as well.
Let's go.
That needs to be ticked off.
Nah.
Uh-huh. All right, let's do this. Hit us.
Okay, you have found like 5 minutes of excuses already.
Yeah.
So just saying, no pressure, but you better get that right. So first question around law 7. Does anybody know what law 7 is?
Cantona.
Sorry, say it again.
No, I don't know what it is.
I'm going to go with like yellow cards and red cards, cautions.
Now that comes later.
Okay. Anyone else have a guess?
I'm not even going to guess.
Okay.
Offside.
Next question.
No, comes later as well. It's a duration of the match. Of the match. And I raised that question with you because at the World Cup, we have seen plenty of additional time, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So, what are the incidents actually that you allow time to be added? So an allowance for time lost in each half should be made for which of the following? A, goal scored. B, substitutions. C, assessment of injured players. D, caution or send-offs. You can choose more than one. So
all of them. I'm going all four.
All four.
They all take time. Celebrations take time. Substitutions take time. Injuries take time. And booking in terms of your communication. So all four for me.
What was B again?
B was the substitutions.
Mm-hmm.
So we have goal scored.
Mm-hmm. I'm saying four. I'm going with all four, BB. I don't know what they're doing.
Bex, what you are doing?
Oh, God. Well, I don't think...
Substitution, assessment of injured players, cautions, send-offs.
Definitely cautions and send-offs for me. That's a D. That's a yes. What was C again?
Assessment of injured players.
Yes, that's a definite yes. Substitutions, I'm not 100%. Yeah. I don't know about substitutions.
That's a basic.
Right, I could walk off and I remember they used to just hurry me. So that's time wasted.
Yeah, and then I don't know if it's goals. I think goals, if there's excessive goal celebration, then potentially. Otherwise, I'm not 100%
Mate,
sure.
Yesterday, Brazil celebration must have took 5 minutes.
Who's? So,
Brazil, the celebration.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, that's what I'm saying. For like an additional, you know, excessive goal celebration. So I would have said all four, but I feel like this is a trick question. I feel like it's not goals scored, but like excessive celebration and goals scored or something like that.
This is the problem. The referees always try and trick us. Just
yes, that's
all
it.
Of them. That's it. All of them. That's it. And then it's simple. Simplify things. All of them.
Okay, Eartha, what are you saying?
I said 4 and 3. Which so is part D, of 7.
C and D? Oh, geez, Louise. All right, Eartha's wrong. Okay, go ahead.
So, Farah is like almost correct. And Bex has exactly made the clarification to it. So, goals, the time when time is only added, when goals are scored, when there is an excessive celebration. Ooh, you have seen that before.
I mean,
excessive celebration.
I hope that you knew that, Bex, because you do I work know, with referees. Should. You have an advantage.
I should. I 100% agree with you, Farah. However,
so was I right then? Because I said 4 if it was excessive, but actually it's 3.
No, shut up, Earth.
You can have the next one then.
So the answer is B, C, and D.
B, C, and D.
And only goals if there's excessive celebration. Okay, next question.
Perfect. A player who has been named on the team sheet and is on the field of play just before kickoff commits a red card offense and is sent off. So I read out 3 statements to you and you tell me which one is correct. Okay.
God, I already know what the question is going to be.
So she cannot be replaced by a substitute. And her team will start with 10 players. She can be replaced by a substitute, and the substitute can be replaced by a newly named player coming onto the team sheet. Or she can be replaced by a named substitute who cannot be replaced. This means that during the match, the team will have one less person on the team sheet.
This is a trick question.
Wait, what? I didn't even understand the third one.
Be all of them. That makes sense. The third one, basically, if she plays, it means you have one less player on the substitutes. Mm-hmm. So if you start with 18 players in terms of subs and the 11 and 7 subs, you'll end up with 11 players and 6 subs. So you've got 17 players you can choose from.
Oh, yeah.
That's Ooh, what that
means. So you can.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So you can, so that was the one where you can substitute.
Yeah, but I'm confused because it's like I would question if the player that is sent off, right, mm-hmm. isn't a starter, mm-hmm. then they're going to start with 11 players. She's only replaced off the bench.
Yeah.
So therefore,
correct.
That number one has to be void because you haven't said in your question whether she's a starter or not. So
I did. I said, okay.
You said she was a starter.
You didn't say she was a starter.
I said she was on the field of play. I assume only the starters would have been on the field of play. But I take
in the warm up. I thought you meant the warm up.
No, before the game starts.
Before the kickoff.
Oh, okay. So then,
but it could have been warm up before the game starts. Could have been warm up technically. Yeah, so far, I can see
for
warm up.
I think question go to one. Is it one?
It's C.
Was A.
They start the game with 10 players, I would say, whatever that
no,
answer
C.
was.
So you think A. So far, you think A. Because they start the game. She gets a red card.
Well, she's already on the team. So therefore, there can't be 17 players because she's already named. You've already said that she's named. So there can't be. So there's already 18 named. You've already said that. She's on the team sheet.
You have
so I say C. I say
C. 11 players. You have 11 players. Mm-hmm. And you have a number of substitutes with, in this case, seven.
Seven, yeah.
So you have 18 in total, 11 on the field. And seven named as substitutions.
Yep.
If one of the 11 is sent off for a red card offense before kickoff, then the 11 can start with somebody coming in from the substitution bench.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That works. So you start the game with 11.
So let's see.
You can't replace.
You can't replace the sub.
The one on the sub.
Correct.
You can start the game with how many players can you start the game?
You can, because you can only have
17.
Three. No, shut up, Earth.
It is.
Saying, you can play a game with eight players. You can play a match with eight players, right? You can start a game with eight players.
Yeah. Exactly.
So therefore,
you need a goalkeeper.
Yeah,
you need a goalkeeper.
You haven't said if it's a goalkeeper that's sent off, so you're tricking us again. BB, that doesn't make any sense, because the reason why you're sending off somebody, right, is for their behavior, whatever it is, right? Mm-hmm. So they should be at a disadvantage then, because if you're sending somebody off, it's clearly to give that opposition a disadvantage.
Can
so
I give an example?
It doesn't make sense to replace them and make the game even when it doesn't make sense.
Well,
but
technically,
on.
You're losing when you're starting players, so that is a disadvantage, right?
So stupid. I'm just putting it out there because that is a stupid thing. I don't get it.
No, but there is a disadvantage because you lose your starting one of your starting players.
Let me
so you're already starting the game with like a substitute player.
Let me try and explain.
So there's still a disadvantage. You're just saying it should be a bigger disadvantage of playing with 10.
Okay,
can I give another example?
Wait, 11v11, right? So we're on the pitch now. We're 11v11. The game, the whistle hasn't been blown. We've done the toss up, whatever. They're ready to kick off, right? A player then is abusive because I'm imagining that's why she gets sent off, right? The ball hasn't been kicked for kickoff. You send her off the field of play, right? To then be able to sub her, you might as well just say, manager, sub her off rather than giving her a red card, because it's pathetic that she can be replaced.
So another example.
If it's your top scorer, you lose one of your starting 11, one of your best players.
Tamar still can play with 11. It's harder to play with 10 than it is to play with 11.
Still interesting. I think it's an interesting perspective. Eartha, go.
Just a quick, because I think in the Men's World Cup, a similar thing happened, not in terms of being sent off, but the goalkeeper that was starting fell ill during the national anthem, right? And they were able to take that goalkeeper off, and they put another goalkeeper on, and then they still had their seven subs, correct? Yeah. So instead of being sent off, actually, another example, if someone's feeling sick or something happens, actually, you don't want them to be disadvantaged just because someone's ill. You want it to be an even game, so they're still able to have that 11v11. That's why I'm going WSL in January. I better get my fitness running shoes on.
That is completely different. That's completely different. I mean, if you're ill, like, you shouldn't be punished for that. But if your behavior isn't within the laws of the game, you should be punished for it.
But so she hasn't gone on the field. Why does everyone else on the whole team get punished for it when she hasn't even gone on the field to play? Why does the rest of the team?
They're lining up ready to kick off.
Nah, it's a team sport.
Yeah, but it hasn't started. Has the game hasn't started? But I think we've got a middle finger already.
I knew
this was going to be controversial. I was waiting for a middle
finger. No more questions of the laws of the game.
I think we're going to move on now.
Yeah, I think we do. Yeah, I think that's definitely a good idea. So, but you got a flavor for what we are actually doing and how tricky it is. And we are applying the laws of the game. We haven't written the laws of the game. Okay. And sometimes it's really important to just remind yourselves that the laws of the game are applied all over the world in every country. Everybody who's playing football is playing under the same laws of the game. So even if in some culture areas, you might think like, oh, why are we applying this law here? But when you take it to an international perspective, then things become clearer as well.
Mm, it has to be a global standard at some point, doesn't it? Let's move on from the laws of the game, because as fun as that was, I think a really interesting topic, and Farah Earth and I were chatting about this like since it started. Actually, we talked about it on our last podcast last week about the female referees in the World Cup. How does that work? Because, you know, you've you could have actually been there had you been continued? And what was it like when you were refereeing? What is the impact, do you think, of having female referees? Because we said last week, who cares? Like, at the end of the day, it should be, who cares? They're good referees. They're good match officials. Who cares? But we know this is having a significant impact on refereeing. I want to hear what you think about it.
How amazing. How amazing it was to see female officials on that stage, World Cup, broadcasted all over the world. Like being seen as something normal in their actions. And if we're not talking about it anymore at some point, it might become normality. Because at the end of the day, I fully agree, it's all about performance. And if the official is male or female, whatever ethnic background, religion, It doesn't matter. If you're doing a good job, you should be in charge of the football match. Mm-hmm. And like seeing these officials, these female officials at the World Cup was something very inspiring, I think, for girls and young women sitting at home watching TV and actually seeing a real chance of making that journey all the way to the top. And actually, in England, we are very much ahead of the curve because for us here, it is so normal that we see female officials in all the different competitions all over the country on the weekends. For us, it's already a normal picture. So, that's really interesting that we are now getting to this on a world stage as well.
You talk about the different backgrounds. Like, do you like if there's 5 or 10 referees that are all equally exactly the same, nothing is different. As a lead in refereeing, would you think in terms of having an impact that actually you'll pick a range of different referees because you know from visually or the difference that it will have to have that wider spread? Or would you just think actually we're all the same, it doesn't really matter? Like, does that have an impact in terms of choice? Do you think about the bigger picture first or as well as the refereeing quality?
Diversity is so important. You wanna watch a football match and you want to think like, I can be there. I can see my mates are there. So I wanna be there. If you can't see it, you can't be it. Mm-hmm. So like having this diversity around refereeing, like having this diversity around people who are playing football is so important.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I have a question around, and it's only because obviously I've been watching the World Cup games, right? And as I mentioned before, when I was talking about the women's game and the men's game in terms of the intensity and the speed in which it's played at, and tell me if I'm wrong, because obviously I'm not a referee, so I was obviously watching. I don't know the female referee's name that did the Germany game, right?
Stephanie Frappart.
Okay, there you go. I didn't want to pronounce it. Yeah. But when I was watching, right, it felt as though, and I'm sure, have you watched the game?
Yeah.
Have you watched it? It felt as though because of the speed in which they play at, one, it felt like she was trying to gain an advantage in terms of her positioning. So anticipating, as we spoke about the forward passing, but also you think about the women's games for referees, when you've moved into an area to assess the play, it's easier for you to move out of the line of the pass of the ball, right? In the women's game, because it moves at a slower speed. But in the men's game, it moves so quickly. Sometimes I found that she was in the line of the pass, not regularly, but she was in the line of the pass in the men's game. Now, how difficult is that? Because as I said, it moves quickly. I mean, even when I play with guys, I can't, when we talk about comparing the games, you can't. The men are so much more faster. So even as a player, I'm not good enough to play with the men, right? But it's the same for the referee. At times I felt like she was already trying to anticipate to gain an advantage in terms of her positioning, but then also she was in line of some of the passing lines of the players when they was trying to make passes. Am I wrong in that assessment? That's what I'm going to ask.
No, as you can see with male officials as well. Similarly. It really depends on like how are the teams playing, and you have normally it's like really difficult when you have the 6 and 7 going around the midfield area, because that's the same area pathway where the referee where the referee is running as well. So my nightmare always was like refereeing Bayern Munich with Franck Ribéry. we crashed into each other so many times because we shared the same space.
But then there's that question, and maybe obviously you don't want to be too far away from your decision making, right? But sometimes in gaining that advantage, which I felt she wanted to do, she knew that they were going to progress with the ball. She was trying to get in a higher start position, right? But I'm saying, if you already know that and the speed in which it goes at, isn't it better sometimes to stay behind play and see from that point of view? Or is that harder to make a clearer decision?
It's very hard then to get the angle to the decision. Sometimes it's not about how close are you to the position. Sometimes it's how do you create the best angle to actually see the contact or not no contact. So to judge the incident, it's the angle is always more important than the distance.
Okay,
that's a good life lesson too. Sometimes it's just about shifting your angle to see things a little bit differently.
I'm still saying that Japan ball was out
100%. Anyway, but let's not go into that because I feel like that's going to be a loss of the game. But Bibi, what in terms of like, you know, now we see the women in the World Cup, great, but what were the challenges? Because arguably, I mean, I would put my neck out there and say you were good enough to ref the men's World Cup. You were. But there were politics, in my opinion, from my perspective, you don't have to comment on it if you don't want to, that stopped you from being able to referee at a men's World Cup, which that must hurt just a little bit, FYI. It hurts me a little bit as, you know, a friend and someone who's seen you work so hard in the men's game and not be able to ref at the very, very top level of that. But what are the challenges that you see for female referees now? And what are the challenges that you're looking at and facing at the PGMOL, which is, if people don't know, the governing body for the referees in England, and you run the women's side of that? Biggest challenges?
Two things. I'm massively proud to be a puzzle piece in this legacy. So, because there have been female officials before me who were paving the way, who put like obstacles around, like on side, who broke glass ceilings to give me an easier start to officiating. And I made it hopefully an autobahn. Like a motorway, autobahn in Germany, where you can go as fast as you want, right? So, for the next generation to move even further, like being part of this legacy is wonderful. And I'm so delighted to be involved on the other side now to fight for this equality for our officials, to make sure they have the same possibilities, to make sure they are recognized for their performance, to make sure that they are putting every effort in to be the best they can be. So now, like working on the structures and like supporting the officials on the field of play that they can actually focus on what they are doing for the 90 minutes, this is a wonderful job. I love it every single day, and I love to fight for the girls.
So can I ask, is in that then, are the WSL officials, are they all now full-time professionals? Everybody that referees in the WSL one?
They're professional. They're not all.
Is it full-time? Full-time? It's not full-time. They're professional in terms of, yeah, I understand that, but they're not full-time professionals in terms of pay, and their sole focus is to be a referee.
They are not full-time officials right now, but we have plenty of them are part-time officials, and they are. And this is very important for the officials as well. They are professional. Mm-hmm. The amount of work they are putting in, the amount of training hours and days they are putting in, the preparation they are putting in, the travel they are putting. They have like an away game every single weekend. They never have a home game. They're traveling the country. So the amount of times they are putting in to be the best they can be, this is a professional approach.
Yeah, so I'm going to compare it to when I thought I was, professional. We're playing the game. So you're working full time, and I'm trying to be the best professional I can be in terms of giving all the hours to training, the traveling, the trying to eat correctly whilst working. So it's similar to when our game was amateur, right? But still, as much as I put in, I could never get myself to the levels that would require me. Say, for example, international level, you could always see the gap. You can get away with it when you're playing club football, and then you go to international and it's like, man, I wish I was a full-time professional. My sole focus was just training, just playing, recovery, all of that. Because the distraction of the work and the hours that you put in, doesn't matter how hard you work, you're still at a disadvantage because of you're tired, the fatigue and all, you know, the mental stress of work. There's a lot going on. So it's I don't ever argue that these referees aren't trying to be the best that they can be. But when the game's turning professional and every now team in our league is full-time professionals, to then have part-time, although professional referees, they're still at a disadvantage, and it still then puts the game at a disadvantage.
And this is why we are here to work on these structures to get these things done and over the line and make sure that the officials can focus and spend as many hours as they want on officiating to make a living out of it.
Mm-hmm. And I think how far away are we from that? Sorry, I keep asking questions. How far away are we from say for example, just the WSL solely having referees that are full-time professionals? That's a profession. How far away are we in that?
I don't think we're far away from that. But at the end of the day, as always, like, somebody has to fund it as well, right?
Yeah,
that was
going to be my point. That was going to be my point, because I think, I mean, Eartha, feel free to jump in here too, but we talk a lot about having the structures in and behind that are so important. It's not just, you know, you get given a crop of referees, make them really good, BB. It's all about recruitment, you know? Like, if we're constantly showing on TV that it's okay that managers are screaming in the faces of the fourth officials and linesmen and referees, who is going to want to be a referee? Nobody, unless you're, you know, a masochist. So I think the behavior that is in the women's game that we have currently needs to be protected, that, you know, there is the right way to treat people. And we talked about this very early on in our podcast with the red card and behavior in the game. And Farah and I disagreed a little bit about, you know, what should be allowed and what's passion versus behavior that's respectable, but which is fine. But I do think that, you know, the recruitment element is a big one. And if we're not showing the respect and referees aren't regarded as just another team that needs to be part of the game, that, like you say, Farah, if we have poor refereeing, it ruins the whole game for all of us. So why are we now then yelling at referees, screaming at them, giving them crap feedback, when really we all need to be supporting them more, because we need better referees. We need to recruit more people, more young girls, more young boys wanting to come into the women's game. So it becomes more competitive. So they become better referees. We need to be paying them more. We need to be training them better. We need to have more coaches. You know, your coaching staff has doubled this year, but you only had you and one other dude last year who did a fantastic job. So there's this whole big piece around referees, but the behavior element, I think, is a big one as well.
You made one thing very clear here. We need to work together. We all want to develop and grow the women's game, the game as a whole, and we all have a stake in it. And especially in the women's game, we are so proud of our culture, right? The way we're treating people, the way we are behaving with each other, and the way we have grown the game. And look at the Euros in summer, like, what a fantastic occasion. So now we have this time frame, and I fear that it's just a small time frame to keep that culture, to protect the culture we have, to protect the culture that makes us actually different and stand out from every other competition. Like, when people want to go to the big stadiums with their kids, they are choosing the women's game on purpose because they like this family-friendly environment. They like how people are celebrating good football matches together. And this is the culture piece we need to save. And we all have a stake in that. And the role models out there, the coaches, the officials, the key players, everybody involved need to be reminded that how we treat each other with respect is going to be the picture that we show the world from our competition.
And you guys are the police.
You know what? It's difficult because I don't think that, especially in the women's game, I mean, I don't think in any other game, whether that be through grassroots, whether that be through the men's professional or the women's, look, football, it brings that passion. It brings that emotion, right? And sometimes, and obviously results matter, especially now in the women's game. For coaches, results matter. They, you know, their jobs and that, whereas you think 10 years ago when I played, you could manage and get relegated and still have a job for 20 years. Now it's not like that. It's changing. These people are being paid as professionals. Their jobs are on the line. And decision-making is important through officials, through their own team players. And I don't think it's anything that players or coaches have at referees, because I mean, all of you would have seen how I spoke to my own teammates when we make the wrong decision, because that's what you do. That passion and emotion that's within you as a sports person and somebody that is competitive is always going to be there, whether that be at the referee for what they see as a wrong decision or whether it be at their teammate for a wrong decision. I don't think it's anything against the referee. I think it's more about how they see a decision being made, right? No, are we agreeing, or are we just like, do you know what I mean? Because I've sat there on the bench. I've played. I've seen myself shout at players. I've seen myself shout at referees. But I've also sat there then as a coach on the bench at Reading. And sometimes, you know, a fourth official, that when they're there, sometimes it's just about the communication and answering some of the decision that the on-field referee is making to just calm and settle the emotion on the sideline. When they're not prepared to do that, that's when I think it looks as if they're then being disrespected, because then, as I say, that emotion then comes in, which turns sometimes to anger, and it looks a lot worse than maybe what it is or could have been.
Emotion is wonderful, and emotion is part of the game, and emotion should be there. That's what's driving it. But look, I have the application on my iPad, which is called the FA Player. So I can watch all the different matches in all the, like, the Women's Super League competition, the Women's Championship competition. And if the journalists that are, like, the doing the moderation, if they are, like, kind of saying, I'm so sorry for the language you can hear, we're not able to cut that out, basically, I think that's embarrassing.
Do you know the other thing too, like, Farah, to your point, like, I hear what you're saying, I know what you mean. It's not necessarily directed at referees, it can be directed at anyone. But my point is if the managers knew the laws of the game, they'd actually realize that half the time they're yelling at the referees or the officials, they're actually making the right decision, but they just don't understand the laws of the game. So there's part that, there's part referees making wrong decisions, but at the end of the day, everybody needs referees to be better. And everybody wants players to be better. Everyone wants the coaches to be better. And there's a lot of support for coaches, players, media, but where's the support for referees? And that's the part that I just don't understand that, because we need it. We need them to be good from a game perspective. Ursula, what are you thinking?
I was just going to say, in terms of, like you just mentioned about making wrong decisions and having a go at the officials, is there any analysis done, BB, in terms of decisions or potentially bad calls that are actually right, which are actually quite common in the game, where actually it means that people don't understand the laws of the game? And are these then maybe transferred to clubs to say, last season, these were the calls that were kind of people were up in arms against more than others. And actually we can see that this is the law of the game and this is why it was right. So actually we start to educate them in a calmer scenario. So actually that transitions into them not challenging, I guess, the officials as much for those decisions, because they understand it more. Is there that educational piece as well?
Such a good question.
Hey, Erica's going on like she had good relationships with referees. She was terrible. In her questioning, it's like you're blowing my mind.
But it's really, it's so important. Look, like, in 90 minutes, a referee team is taking up to 300 decisions in every single game. 300-ish.
In every game?
And every single game is going to be evaluated. So every single decision is judged in right, wrong, expected, difficult. So every single one. So it's like the depths of feedback that is going in there is massive. So we know all the different decisions and all the judgments on that. And what we actually do then is you can see trends where things doesn't go too well or go superbly well. when it comes to, let's say, for example, handballs, when it comes to penalties, when it comes to upper body fouls. So you can see all of that. And then with our training and development we give to the officials, you can focus on exactly these areas. And when you do that, you can see the next weekend, the decisions are better in this area. So this is like our tool, how we actually influence the content of our training as well. And it's really, tell me another occupation where employees are like judged on every single of the 300 decisions they do every single weekend, all the time.
So it's players.
It's a tough player.
When players are doing analysis and the coach is pointing the finger, and they're clipping every clip, every bad decision you made as a player. Don't worry, we get it too.
But none of the good ones either, do you? It's like it's very rare that you would get every single one of your clips. I mean, you do it by the end of your career.
In terms of you're being educated in terms of the people delivering the job as an official. Why doesn't any of that information then go on to, like I said, to the teams, to the coaching staff to say, this is the common thing that you're constantly calling out? Because if we're looking at abuse and bringing the game forward, actually they're the ones who are giving the abuse and are challenging the decision. So they also need to be educated. And then the more we do that, the closer they'll be getting to the laws of the game. And I'm thinking of you guys in terms of transition, because then if they're good at laws of the game, you can recruit some more to become referees as well. So for management and players, It's a clear pipeline. I'm thinking about
I should definitely, Eartha. Like your thoughts are amazing, because that's actually what it is. Like, we are in constant conversations with the clubs, and we also like give them we have like meetings all together as well to go through some topics that are highlighted by us, by the teams as well. We get a lot of feedback from the teams, which you can clearly see that they have a lot of knowledge going on when it comes to decision-making processes and how do we get processes right all together. So this working relationship is so important. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, like Bex and I have seen the journalists, the media, before the season started and before the Euros as well, to go through some like hot topics that are definitely coming up, that you want to be prepared, because what you want is like, you want to come across knowledgeable, you want to make good comments on air live, which are factually correct in the laws of the game. So it's like we're all working closely together to make sure that we deliver the best content. And Eartha, I'm sure we're like our next camp is in Gen. You definitely should come along.
We need to catch up, because I've got a great idea, and I know it's going to work in terms of getting players on board. So
I can see
in January, guys, in my referee kit.
I look forward to that. I really do. I'd like just like to watch you running around the pitch trying to keep up with the play at this stage in your career. But no, it's so interesting. I think one of the things that BB you've always done well, Far mentioned it earlier, was the communication. So as a player, you would always, you know, turn to me and say, "Hey, captain, your number six is," well, that was me, "your number seven is getting pretty close to," it's probably pretty accurate too, "is getting pretty close to a yellow card. You might just want to have a chat to calm her down." You're like, you were always trying to avoid conflict situations, scenarios. And I think I still owe you for the time when I took out Marta at about 7 minutes into the game and did not give me a yellow card. So I think that's one of the reasons why I am working with the referees right now, is because I owe you. But you were really good at that. And that's what you've done so well here in England, is exactly what you're saying, Eartha. So important, the stakeholder management, talking with the clubs, getting feedback, feeling like clubs and players can talk to the referees and give feedback and get feedback back, I think has been such a shift in the dynamic of looking at referees and match officials, especially in this country. But ideally, that's how it really should be globally, isn't it?
I would love to say officially, thank you for having me. It was absolutely wonderful. And get ready for another series of Boots, Balls and Brass at the end of January, when Eartha is telling us everything that she has learned at the referee camp. I can't wait.
We might be calling on you too near the end of the season, just to chat more about some more specific topics and see how Eartha's career is going by then.
Lovely. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Bibi. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Have a good one.
Appreciate it. Very good. Thank you.
All the best. Bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. Well, that was a very interesting halftime team talk, and we will be having Bibi on at some point in the future. And we will be all betting on Eartha's refereeing profession shift after this. But in the meantime, if you guys missed it, the FA announced that Crystal Palace will be hosting at Selhurst Park the 2022-23 FA Women's Conti Tyres League Cup Final. That's on Sunday, the 5th of March. So get your tickets, get involved, get into it. I'm sure there's probably going to be a record attendance, as has been the standard for the season. And that's pretty much it for us for this episode of Boots, Balls and Bras. Farah, Eartha, thank you guys as well. And we'll see you all next week on Boots, Balls and Bras. Have a good one. Bye.
Ciao.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.